We're back
with another cool podcast. This is Franklin Sterling III, and I'm here with
Karen Soliday.
And we are going to continue where we left off on our podcast.
Podcast number two.
We were last talking about Karen's writing process. I'd like to continue with that subject. Karen, would you like to? Where were we?
What were we talking about?
We were discussing your writing process and.
Yes, right. I know what it was. It's that I didn't like to read so much books when I was younger, and I remember actually getting in trouble. My fifth grade teacher for not reading enough books.
When I was a kid, I used to I would read comic books and things like that. I would hide underneath the work table in our classroom, you know, back in seventh grade. And my friends and I would trade action figures and just read comic books when we were supposed to. Because we always had there was always a half hour, 45 minute mandatory reading time that everybody had to do. So.
Well, I'd be reading Time Magazine.
That's the type of stuff that you would be reading literally, Time Magazine.
I loved Time Magazine. In fact.
I remember I had a bunch of National Geographics.
When loved
I
loved those.
I had tons of National Geographics. I loved it. Looking at the different photo ops that they used to do of all the different ethnicities from around the world and from
I loved it.
The animals, all the different types of wildlife.
We would read encyclopedias. Mm-hmm. We had the World Book. But my dad was a TV news anchor man, and so we had all the periodicals like Time, Look, Life. Newsweek, World Report, U.S. News and World Report. I would pore over those.
Highlights?
We didn't get highlights, but we got Boys Life. Mm-hmm. And we got the Scholastic, Weekly Reader. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love those. And I would read those. And, hey, it paid off because when I was a senior in high school, I won the Time Life High School Current Events Test, National.
What does that mean?
That means that I scored the highest of in the highest percentile of all high school students that were quizzed on what was happening in the world.
Whoop-dee-dee. Woo!
I won.
Karen,
I got to.
Karen's a very,
it's
very
a facty,
smart person.
A facty knows, thing. A facty thing.
You have a lot of.
Curious.
I don't want to say useless knowledge because that's not always
no,
the case.
No, because I won on Jeopardy. I'm a Jeopardy winner.
Yeah. You were on Jeopardy. But I remember I used to always, every time that we met to just talk about the book, you'd always have just random facts that you would ask me about and tell me about.
It's because I'm curious and it's interesting to me to know. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to be a smart aleck, nothing.
Right.
I just love it.
That's very good for somebody who wants to be a writer to have those types of thoughts.
So, but that's how it was. So I,
and there were even parts about, in the book where you would reference certain things like grandma's decoupage, and I would be like, "What?
Do you know what that is?
I know what it is now."
Let me tell you, there's a backstory to that.
Gigging for frogs, and it's right. A lot of people don't even know that gigging is a word.
Yeah, it's the tool is a gig. Mm-hmm. It's a three-prong tool that you spear things with. No, but decoupage. Okay, my grandmother was a decoupage craft freak, and she was really good at it. And there was a little run there in many years where we would get all kinds of things to hang up on the wall, boxes, mm-hmm. with decoupage. And what decoupage is you take pictures that you can snip out of things or whatever, and then you paste them on things, and then you lacquer them over and over and over. That, everybody, it's kind of ugly, actually.
It's an old kind of
technique.
Thing that they used to do.
That can be cool, but it was really big in the 70s.
Yeah.
And my grandmother did a lot of decoupage, and we got a lot of decoupage. Mm-hmm. And amongst other things. All my sisters are kind of crafty. In fact, I have a sister, Heidi, who's really good at cross-stitching. Mm-hmm. Man, she's done some incredible stuff. And then I have a sister, Sarah. Man, she can turn anything into a cool thing. Objet d'art.
Random arts and crafts?
stuff. Yeah, she, you know, my family is really creative.
When I was a kid, I remember my mom used to have, we would have like a plastic bag on our coat rack by the door, by our front door. And every time that we had like an iced tea, you know, those mixed, not mixed, the powdered iced tea cans with like the scooper in it. The And the plastic lid, we would save the lid. We would save the scooper. We would save like the little ties that you put on, those the plastic Twizzler ties thingies. That you put on bread.
Yes.
And we would every, you know, if there was a rainy day or there was a snow day, we'd just go into the bag and we would take out
stuff.
We would empty the bag out on the table and just pick things. We'd, you know, glue them together and, you know, make just like random crafts and stuff like that.
I still do that. I have drawers where I still keep stuff. Mm-hmm. I went, oh, this little thing, this would be good. I'm keeping that because I'm going to need to use that. And you know what? I end up using them in lots of things. I'm really good at fixing things, fixing certain kinds of things. I'm really good at gluing ceramic stuff back. That's from those days of, you know, utilizing every last shred of everything that's around you. That's probably, my mother used to take toilet paper rolls. Mm-hmm. You know, she saw it in a magazine or something. And she would, when they were done, and she'd keep the electric cords in drawers wrapped up in those toilet paper uh-huh. things. My mom was good at that, too. She would find interesting uses right. for things.
Right.
So I read lots of magazines, and I preferred them, and I liked reading what the bestseller lists were. I was always memorizing. And I really didn't have to memorize mm-hmm. lists of movies, mm-hmm. loved movies, movies, television shows, music, just all of that. I was just like a sponge. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't get into the actual writing until I heard about this book, The Artist's Way, which is about helping people who have lost their way that were creative and want to get back to their artist mm-hmm. self. And it was really a good book. And I took a workshop, a live workshop, with the authors of the book, mm-hmm. Julia Cameron and Mark.
Is this recently? This was
at least 15 years ago. I can't believe it.
So this was before he wrote the book?
Yes. And what I started doing was with the lady that was facilitating.
And before you met me.
Yeah. I took it at the Bodie Tree in West Hollywood. And I highly recommend the book. And so Kelly, the person that facilitated the workshop, started having improvisational writing groups.
You still remember this lady?
No, I do, man. No, I still see her. In fact, I still see her at Starbucks. She's still doing it. In fact, there's an advertisement for the Artist's Way workshop up at the Starbucks on National and Castle Heights right over there. Mm-hmm. She started having an improvisational writing group at her house. And I thought that would be an interesting group to take. And I did that for at least 5, 6, 7 years and here and there. I mean, steadily. Mm-hmm. And it sparked. This is where it started. It completely sparked the interest in writing into me. Because some of the things that she had us do way back then would be open your wallet, just grab the first thing that you grab.
And write about it.
And write timed writings, improvisational mm-hmm. writings. And just write. If you can't think of anything, just write down, I'm sitting here in this chair and I'm completely... I can't think of anything. Yeah, just and then what would happen is just doing that and being in the now, then that would help the flow, the creativity would flow out. And I ended up from that writing some pieces that people loved. They loved. I got a lot of positive feedback from that. And I ended up being pretty confident and pretty good at, to me, what good writing is, what I like anyway, I don't know, but it's being able to see a snapshot and to be able to describe something, mm-hmm. to write it down and describe touch, taste, smell, feel. Hearing, who, what, when, where, why, succinctly, compactly, that when somebody reads this, they are
They're in the room. Right.
They are right there. They can smell it. They can taste it.
That's a great transition into how
art.
Into how, I guess, what kind of strengthened our friendship after, you know, we initially met. Because at first, you were kind of just...
I was just
random, you know,
the admissions lady.
Acquaintance. Those people, most of you probably don't know, but Karen was my admissions representative in the college that I went to when I was studying for my bachelor's degree. And we were always kind of acquaintances with each other. And every once in a while, I would stop by her office and I would show her, you know, what types of things I was learning and what I was working on. And that's where we started to, as you know, we referred to the previous podcast where she had the idea. She would tell me about the idea. And then, you know, she would send me on my way with a bunch of vocabulary terms to incorporate into the character of Henry T. Finch. And then I would return to her with, you know, a sketch here, a sketch there. And she would be like, yeah, that's kind of where I wanted to be, but not exactly. Can you, like, keep going with it?
Right.
And then I took a writing class.
Yeah.
And it was in that writing class that Karen and my friendship was really mended together and solidified.
Because you had me edit this story.
I had her edit a bunch of stories that I wrote. You know, throughout the class, I think I wrote 4 or 5 stories. And I'd say they were good stories, but
I still have
Karen,
the copy
what
of
Karen
them.
Added to them was that sense of being there, of getting that touch, taste, smell, that feel of being in those situations that the characters in my stories were in. And then that helped push the story of Henry T. Finch and the Red Bedspread forward.
Yes.
Because Karen saw that I had writing abilities and, you know, she
That's
had,
true. And
she
we could
had
do,
writing
we could,
abilities. We bounced
it was a light bulb.
Forward.
It was a light bulb. And we thought, hey, man, we could become a creative team and put out stuff. And let's start with this idea. So I ran the idea.
And let's propel this idea forward.
And you were on top of that. And so then you would come and stop in all the time at my desk because I was always working way overtime and late. I was there till every day. I
at
was working
least
late.
9, 10 o'clock.
Every single day, trying to get work done. And you would pop in the door, and I'd still be sitting there. And
there's another kind of dynamic to our friendship is Karen's kind of like an older sister.
Yeah.
We've always kind of had that kind of sisterly kind of vibe. I don't know if I seem like a younger brother to you or not. Or like,
yeah.
Or what,
soon I'll be slapping you around, you know.
I definitely.
No, because you would slap me around. Yeah, kind of like a just a confidant. I'm sort of like your mom, away from mom, kind of, but just somebody that you can bounce things off of and feel safe and feel confident.
Yeah.
And so you did. I remember you came in and I know he's giving me the sign, but no, he was, I'm not going to mention names, but Franklin would come in and would talk about.
There were people, there was things,
you know, the girls
like,
that he was liking.
A shoulder
and,
that
know,
I could lean on.
Yeah, just normal stuff in the growing up process and just other stuff, whatever things. But then once you started getting, to be the king of the hill at school, yes, somewhat. He was valedictorian, by the way.
Not a very big accomplishment in my mind.
Well,
but
Franklin is very smart, a taskmaster. I mean, you will work on something night and day and night, till it is done, and you're very disciplined in that way, and you won't let anything else interrupt you, get in the way, nothing. I mean, which whereas
a lot to deal with because of how you kept changing the story. Well, you didn't change the story.
Well, there's so much that it changed, but I just keep writing.
Every time that you know, you got the first draft of me, and I was like, is this it? This is, because yeah. I need to have like a solid story to start doing the illustrations, because I wanted all the illustrations to correspond with the different pieces of text and all that stuff. So Karen would come to me every couple of weeks. I'd be like, all right, I got another illustration. And she would be like, okay, cool, I got another copy. I'd be like, what are you talking about? I thought we already had it done.
No.
You know, and things like that. So that kind of...
4 years.
Four years.
But at the end, it was because I finished all the copy. Mm-hmm. And then you were busy, because what he does is the digital paintings, illustrations that you do are very time consuming.
Yeah.
So that allowed me a lot of time to edit, you know, and throw... Basically, we had, and I had to start thinking in terms of how much output you had to put out and what all the work that you had to do. So I know. So I could not interject or change any much of anything. Mm-hmm. I had to keep it within a framework,
right,
because you had X, Y, and Z already finished. And, you know, it just takes too long to finish one plate.
And I wanted these illustrations there. I don't want to say that I hold them sacred, but there is something kind of special to me about them, because I tried to put a lot of effort into making each illustration read well in context with the story, and also provide a visual narrative for the audience to look at.
Well, that's what, but you know what? All illustrators and artists, they do that. No, you can't minimize that, mm-hmm, because that's your blood, sweat, and tears. It's coming out as a picture instead of words on, you know, rhymed words or just words. Yeah. It's coming out as a picture.
And I think it helped you to kind of finalize the copy of, you know, the finished story.
The editing.
By seeing some of these illustrations, as you know, as I finished these illustrations and I showed you them,
yes,
you know, it helps you to finalize that finished story.
And then there was a period of time where you were, you know, working madly on getting all this done, and so I had a lot of time where I could actually go back and re-edit, and I did. I redid so many things, mm-hmm, so many things that allowed me the chunk of time to go back over and over again and tighten up things and tighten it up, mm-hmm, and tighten it up while you were getting all the rest of the plates done, mm-hmm, which took an enormous amount of time.
It did take a long time.
My God.
Two and a half years to do all of the illustrations.
Because when
I did, each illustration is at 300 DPI. It's on a, you know, it's a,
what's large DPI format. For people that don't
DPI
know?
DPI means dots per inch. It's a term that's used, you know, in digital artistry and digital printing.
What does that mean, though? That it's nice and clear?
It's how many dots the screen reads.
Which
per
means
inch.
the more dots.
The more dots per inch, the higher resolution your image is going to be.
Okay.
So I kind of, in a way, shot myself in the foot to, you know, making this take 2.5 years by making them at 300 DPI, because there's a lot of detail in these
illustrations. But when people see them, they're like, I've watched their faces. When people see these illustrations, I've seen people just, their mouths are hanging open. They can't believe how clear and realistic and really great they are.
And I use the technique that I thought was innovative. I haven't seen too much of this style, the style that I did the book in any kind of commercial spaces. I did a combination of 3D modeling within a 3D application mixed with just traditional 2D illustration.
Right.
And I took the 3D models I made, kind of like a hyper-realistic look to the backgrounds where the character
is more of a 2D.
Yeah, he's a 2D
character. Somewhat 2D cartoonish-esque.
There's cartoonish somewhat feels, you know.
Yeah,
to the character,
him,
yeah.
To the character.
But at the same time, it's cool. Still, it fits into that 3D environment.
Right, and the backgrounds are really cool. I mean, and then you added some added things, like, which I picked out, and the average Joe isn't going to know it, but there's some little things in a lot of the different pictures.
There's a lot of
there's
secrets.
Little hidden.
Lots of secrets. Hidden,
which I caught little funny things and that
there's
would make me crack up when I would see them. Like, I can't believe you put that thing in
there. There's
that.
Little things like in one of the pages, there's a painting of, well, it's not a paint, it's an illustration of Henry's, sketches, you know, he's just coloring books and stuff like that. And there's all these crayons skewed across the, or strewn across the table. And the crayon company says Weldon. My middle name is Weldon. So instead of using Crayola, it says Weldon crayons, you know. And then there's a Soliday soup can instead of Campbell's soup, you know, things like that. I also put in one of the illustrations, one of my friends' names is the author on a book.
The Gumby character. Franklin did a cartoon series called Out There. And there's,
I think it got cut within. I had to crop the image, so I don't know if that one's.
I think it's in one of the. There's a toy on the stairs or something, and it's one of the characters. Yeah. From his series Out There, which
and
I thought
also
was funny.
I put in, I'm a really big fan of Renaissance art.
Yes.
And the use of
Illuminati kind of
sacred geometry.
Yeah.
In a way to, there's a term called proximity grouping where, you know, human beings, they pick up on groups of objects, you know, basic shapes before they see detail. Before we perceive detail, we see a shape. So I tried to incorporate large shapes into my compositions. It's hard to see, and if you're not familiar
with what that means,
I'd recommend going online and doing a little bit of research. But it's a very fascinating way, and it's a very effective way, if done properly, to attract the eye.
And that was a big important thing about the layout of some of the pictures, which we talked about, because I had real certain viewpoints. I would say, Franklin, you've got to do this picture so that it looks like this. You just got it because you're so good at this. And if you did it from this angle, it would be so much cooler and different. Not that many people.
A lot of them turned out really well.
They did.
Like the one of him underneath the bed
with the dust bunnies. Yeah.
Page, over the rooftops. I love that illustration.
Yes, yes, I do. I mean, it's just Franklin's got mad skills in that department for sure, and skills that I could never, ever. So that's why we are a good creative team, because he's got the artistic skills, and then I've got the content writing skills.
And I've also got a little bit of skills in kind of directing things.
He is.
When I was in college, I directed a few independent shorts. They didn't go anywhere for obvious. They're not that great. But, you know, I learned a lot, and it helped me to, you know, put more.
No, he's
more
really good at
this.
You're selling
and
yourself short. I know.
That.
I think he's really good. He's also really good at technical things.
The technical things, too. I agree with you on that. I think that comes from growing up, and for me, when I see something, when I produce a piece of artwork, if I want a mass or a large group of people to see it or to be intrigued by it,
See, here's your chance to explain how to say it
to explain
like a writer
my
would.
Artistic
Right.
My artistic process, but I lost my train of thought.
So you're trying to explain, like, what goes into...
So I, like, the way that my mind works is if I create, you know, like, with the book, we created the book with the intention of having it published and reaching a mass market.
Right.
So there's certain traits that a commercial product has. I don't know
how. It's got to catch your eye. Right. It's got to be eye-catching.
There has to be a certain something that catches your eye.
Right. Color, the way character.
The way that it's made, the way it's produced, the way that it's written. Everything has to be a certain.
Written?
What,
ooh, that sounded like Kanye West.
Written?
Church, no church in the wild.
So,
I kind of have like a...
An eye for that kind of thing, where I can tell if something's going to be successful or not successful. What needs to
That's
go into it?
That's a huge skill. That's a mad skill. Yes, I get
don't know
it.
If that I explained.
No,
it
I totally ready, get it. That's why, because we're working on getting our website done, and I'm working with another one of my students who's going to graduate this year, and Franklin. Is helping her sort of lay out the look of the website, and he's got mad skills, interactive skills as well. I see, Frank. What you don't know about Franklin is he is a monster at 3D modeling. He's a monster at the entire creative suite.
Really?
Yeah, but no. But he's saying that. But no, man. You know, he really is the whole Photoshop. What is that? The CS5-6 now. What is that? After Effects. What are those programs? Adobe Photoshop. I mean, kick ass at that. Expert. After Effects, Maya. What else? You know all these things. I mean, he set up all for the podcasting. He could play the guitar. I mean, he's like somebody you want to just live at your house.
Let's say that if I didn't have to have a job and I was free to kind of to do what I wish, and I had a ginormous sum of money that I didn't have to worry about, you know, funds or financial anything like that, I could really apply myself to a lot of subjects.
Yes.
I'm very
quick. He can
learner.
Read tarot cards, you guys.
There's nothing to.
I know, but he's pretty good at it.
But everything that I like, all the skill sets that I have, I taught myself.
Except some. Well, let me just say, he also knows how to take computers apart, PCs, and put them back together again.
I used to.
He still does.
Me and my dad used, when I was a teenager, you know, back in 2000. Ish. Me and my dad used to build computers, and you know, I used to watch this TV show or this TV network it was called ZDTV on DirecTV, and then they got bought out by they changed their name to TechTV, and then that later got turned into G4, what's now G4.
Which is G4, yeah.
It's
gamers hang out.
It's a drastic departure from what started out as. And to me, it's not at all as resourceful
as it used to be.
There used to be these shows. This one guy, his name was Leo Laporte, and he had this TV show where he used to he would just have people call in and talk about computer stuff. He would tell you how to build computers, you know, things like that. So, you know,
I love it. I love it. I've built my last computer with my friend.
I've always had kind of like a technical thinking mind.
People, he's the kind of person you must have, that you must know. I'm fortunate. I love it. I'm sitting right now at your he's got two flat screens set up. We've got the microphones. He set all this up. He knows exactly what to do. We're at the Cathedral of the Adobe Creative Suite. No, not Adobe.
No, it doesn't matter. I mean,
who makes it? I don't know that much about that stuff. I know my, I think my sister-in-law used to work for Adobe. Mm-hmm. Amongst other things. Yeah, I think she just got a promotion. Plug.
Oh, that's right.
She is now Senior Vice President for CBS Interactive. I think she starts tomorrow.
That's kind of cool.
That is pretty freaking awesome. It's been made public, so I can say that right now. But yeah, that is awesomeness. She worked for Disney as a Senior Vice President for 10 years, and she worked for Adobe and I think like Google. I mean, all of those. She lives up in Menlo Park,
California.
Yeah, a Silicon Valley baby. I love it up there.
It's expensive up there.
It is pretty darn expensive.
Like San Francisco is almost, you know, if you don't make a certain, you
it, it's if you make it's, like, it's pretty I hear it's expensive. Pretty high end. It's pretty, but it's real. It's so different than Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. It's just another world. I love it up there.
Well, San Francisco, that was where a lot of the psychedelic movement really took hold.
Haight-Ashbury, City Lights Bookstore. But you know what? A lot of technical, I mean, what you do, you know, digital art and 3D and 2D and all this, right there. Emory, you know, California right up there. That's where Lucas Films and... Pixar,
yep.
It's all right up there. It's Silicon Valley, everything now up there. It's unbelievable. The wealth of that city it's monstrous, but it's different because it's not as ostentatious as it is down here up there. And everybody's much more into fitness, it seems, there in many ways. And it's just the turf.
I think LA is really, parts of LA are fitness minded. Yeah, know,
it's
Monica
just, you know, it's a different, whole different vibe San Francisco is, really. I absolutely love it up there. I love it. I want to go back up there soon.
Do you want to...
Are we getting close to the end of this?
This podcast?
This podcast?
We're kind of coming to that.
We're coming
that
to the
30-minute mark.
We're going to be doing more of these podcasts,
talking about
stuff like politics, art, writing.
Who is Henry T. Finch?
Who is Henry T. Finch?
What goes into the character?
Who is he? He is a little boy.
Let's not give too much away. We got to save some for the next podcast.
We'll talk about Harry T. Finch, his parents, you know, the backstory
all that
of
stuff.
Henry Finch.
We'll wrap it up right now. Thanks, everybody, again, for listening to our podcast.
Yeah.
And we hope to have your ears perk up for the next one.
That's right.
We'll be back.
Bye. Ciao.